Hey, it's Eric G. Around the House is sponsored by Baldwin Hardware. For 75 years, Baldwin Hardware has been known for its first-class quality and craftsmanship in door and cabinetry hardware. As an alumnus of the Baldwin Hardware Design Council, I can say I have seen the details and quality from design to the finished product. If you're looking for a new style and old-world craftsmanship, I can tell you there is only one Baldwin Hardware. Check out what would look great in your home at baldwinhardware.com.
When it comes to remodeling and renovating your home, there is no better show on your radio. This is Around the House with Eric G.
Where's the hammer?
From your back fence to the sidewalk, Eric will tell you how to keep it all in tip-top shape while helping you save a buck while doing it. If you like DIY projects, it takes a lot of practice to get good at it, and Eric is here to guide the way.
Is it on the, go up on the other floor. Somebody go up there and stop the hammering.
All that and more on the fastest 2 hours of home improvement radio.
These are the wrong plans. These are the old plans. Oh.
Welcome to
Stop It! Stop
Around the House with Eric G.
Welcome to Around the House with Eric G. This is where we talk home improvement every single weekend. Thanks for joining us. Hit us up on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all those different things, and that's just Around the House with Eric G. Well, I've got a great guest on the line right here. Mike Ciampo, fire expert. You are Fire Department New York City. Welcome to Around the House.
Eric, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be a part of this program today.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Well, I wanted to bring you on today because you are just a wealth of information when we talk about fire safety. And I mean, you've seen it all, done it all, I think, out there, because I mean, you've got it doesn't take long on YouTube for your name to pop up on there when it comes to fire safety as well. So I wanted to kind of jump into these subjects because I think there's a lot of stuff out there that people don't even realize are big deals until it's too late.
I appreciate it. Like you said, I'm nobody special. I'm very lucky. I grew up in a firefighting volunteer family fire department. Right now we're actually, believe it or not, in our fifth generation.
Nice.
And I spent about 7-8 years in the volunteers, and I'm coming up on my 35th anniversary as a career firefighter. I worked 5 years in Washington, D.C., and right now I'm coming up on my 30th anniversary in the FDNY, which stands for Fire Department City of New York. And it's, you learn a lot over the years, and you see a lot of tragedies and construction concerns, and maybe, we've progressed so far in the building industry, and it's made our operations, definitely has hampered them quite a bit, and I'm sure that's what we're going to discuss a little bit today.
You got it, brother. You got it. Well, you know, it's funny because, and we had a call with, our mutual friend Cheryl here in the last week or two, and you and I started going off the deep end, and she started laughing after she introduced us. But it's funny, you know, in the Northwest here where I live, and out there in the, in the East where you live, vinyl siding is one of those things that I don't see as much out here as I used to, but I know it's super hot out there. And man, that stuff, you get it warm next to a barbecue and you can have a heck of a mess.
Very, very prevalent here on the East Coast. And I would actually even say all up and down the East Coast, south to north, is very easy to install. You know, they wrap the building and we just put our vinyl siding on, and and I was thinking about this after we hung up. It's very prevalent, and I can count, I know numerous departments here on the East Coast in the area I grew up in. Just take a rainy day, people are more prevalent with the gas grill that's on wheels to pull it closer to their house, or they have a bunch of furniture on their deck and they may light it, go inside, or they cooked on it and they said, I'm going to burn the grease off, and they leave it on. Maybe they fall asleep on the sofa. Well, we also saw it with chimeneas out on the decks.
Mm-hmm.
I just burn a little clay chimenea. Well, it heats up the vinyl siding, gets it to its ignition point, it melts, whatever. But the fire will travel right upside the side of the house, and with the vinyl soffits, they just melt. and now we have a raging fire that can go right into the attic space. And to be honest with you, nobody has smoke detectors really up in their attics because it's a non-livable space.
Sure.
And so you could have a raging fire. And I know in my hometown where I grew up, they pulled up one night. Thank God the police officer saw the glow in the sky and he responded there. And he kicked the door in and got the people out. They were luckily with the sheetrock in their bedrooms, but they were still asleep because the smoke detectors wouldn't go off due to the fire all in the attic.
Yeah, so, it's all sealed off. You know, you got drywall up there that's keeping the fire on the side that, and it just hasn't, you know, it's vented out enough. There's no smoke coming down through stuff. And if it's just, you're solid.
So with the gable vent. So, I mean, you know, unfortunately it does unbelievable structural damage. And to just jump into a point there where we're fearful as firefighters, and not to jump to a different subject, but you know, we have the fire entering through the vinyl soffit now, and it extends very rapid. And you know, and I'm not going to put you on a spot here, Eric, but think about your own attic right now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, mine's a storage space for kids' toys, you know, playpens in case you ever have the grandchildren, and you know, we got to save a couple boxes for presents, and you know, storage. But add that fire load and a lot of these newer houses, even if they only have a center pull down attic or small scuttle in a closet, people are going to store material out of their way. They're going to find a way to put material in their attic, even if they have trusses up there. Now we add that fire load to lightweight trusses, and we could have a real problem if firefighters or civilians are trapped on a second floor or we're entering. We could have an earlier collapse of the structure. So the vinyl siding is like a two-sided coin for us, you know.
Well, and then let's talk about what you were just talking about there. Let's dive into this for a minute, because you and I were talking about this as well. So you got the trusses up there. Everything's 24 inches on center. It's 2x4s. You've got little metal bracket pieces that are pressed into the top, you know, 3/8 of that 2x4 holding it together. That ceiling was never engineered for load of the 700 pounds to 1,000 pounds of storage stuff you put up there. And then you get a fire that weakens those connections. And then you put somebody on the roof. I see where the disaster starts to happen from a firefighter point of view.
Right. Now, before we jump into that, and a lot of states have adopted codes where they have put a truss symbol on the front of a structural. That's more commercial.
Yep.
I don't really know of anybody yet that's doing it on a residential. Maybe somebody, one of our listeners in an area, knows of that. There was... you know, I'm involved with the fire service, so I hear a lot. I know a lot of people from codes to fire protection engineers. And one town wanted the new construction to have a little symbol on their mailboxes on the side of the road. That was like a little truss so that they would know that the home was trussed compared to regular structural lumber. But, you know, back to those gang nails or like the stamped metal sheet, the gusset plates, you know, we spoke about it before. I understand it's easy to build the trusses, and there's a place not far from where I live that makes them. And I know they probably lay them out on big tables and they're in jigs so that they press those nailers in there. I just, as a fire service, we don't understand when they have them flat and it's being pressed in, maybe with an air or hydraulic machine, why they just can't put four screws in a gusset plate and maybe get it to hold a little bit longer for us, you know. We have some unbelievable legends in the fire service that wrote books on building construction and collapse of burning buildings. And if you ever mention Brannigan or Dunn to firefighters, they would turn their head immediately. And we were always taught the 20-minute rule for a building collapse. You know, if a fire's, we pulled up and we have 20 minutes and we haven't knocked down this building fire that's in the walls, structural members are affected. Today, we're saying 4 to 7 minutes, we could have a collapse on scene. And, you know, it's, these gusset plates are dangerous to us. We'd love for the industry to get them to bite a little bit more. You know, I spoke to a lieutenant this morning from the FDNY. We were BSing about it. And I told him about this wonderful show I was getting invited to, and I was looking forward to it. And, you know, we said, you know, he said, well, we have four screws on each side. I said, yeah, but would they have to be in different patterns? You know, maybe four on the inside on one side and four opposite on the outside. So, you know, the engineers are going to have to tell us where the strength is with those gusset plates when they put the screws in. But that's
exactly,
you know, I don't want to bring this subject down, but if you do talk to, it doesn't matter if paid or career firefighters, when I mention this,
yeah,
our line of duty death rate is horrible.
Sure.
And if you just Google lightweight construction collapse and firefighter deaths, you know, it's just from the 90s, losing four firefighters in Pennsylvania, you know, up into the 2000s, we actually just had one outside of Howard County, Maryland, and involved a career firefighter where the flooring went, you know, on the first floor. So, you know, it's a prevalent issue to firefighters.
Oh, it is. And, you know, my house, I'm lucky. I've got a more contemporary style house. So the only place I've got trusses in my entire house is just over my two-car garage. But I'm literally, I can look up right now and look at those things and go, man, you know, it's just, you know, 6-inch plates that are holding that stuff together. And it holds up great for just if no one messes with that wood. But as soon as you get that where it gets wet, you've got fire, and you've got all these different stresses on it. I completely understand where you're coming from. And I think it's something that we should be spending some more time on because,
right,
you know, I mean, it's bad.
I agree with you. And we can, let's jump around a little bit if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah.
This, Eric.
This is a freeform show, man. We're just going to go. There are no scripts.
You know, as for contractors, okay, when the delivery comes, you know, my house is built on a little bit of a grade. Okay, I do have stick lumber. I don't have a truss attic. But, you know, a lot of times when that flatbed or tractor trailer comes, does the lull pick it up or is it a tilt truck and he's sliding the trusses off as he backs up with the lumber truck? I see a lot of that here. And, you know, did it hit the ground a little bit? Did they go askew? Did some of those nail gusset plates pop up? Or, you know, for my contractors out there and my carpenters, you know, if you want to do a firefighter a favor, when you set those things, don't be afraid to always tap them in with your hammer a little bit more, you know.
Yeah, make sure they're good, you know.
Yeah, you know, because on delivery, they can go askew those gang nailers. So, like, for us, we'd appreciate that they go in there. But, you know, we spoke about something else the other day. And after we hung up with our little introduction, you know, it started getting me going in my mind. and you know, we just talked about the roof truss and our gusset plates there. We're also seeing the small truss used as flooring, joist. And, you know, the same gusset plates. And, you know, we get a fire that penetrates the ceiling, and it's going to run that spot. But also, twice in the Bronx, when I was a firefighter, before I got promoted, I had run fires. And I was shocked. People installed a ceiling fan, and I don't know who installed it. I can't tell you if it was a licensed professional or not. And think about, I mean, you do these shows, right? DIY,
oh, yeah.
DIY, you know, everybody wants to do it yourself, right?
Oh, yeah,
and,
absolutely.
What happens if we have a bad wiring, you know, an older house, whatever, and you didn't have a great connection, and you heat this motor up and you get an arc, and now we have a fire in that, well, we call it truss void or a truss loft,
yep,
and now it runs inside these little gusset areas. Well, we had a company, you know, that they went inside. Luckily, the smoke wasn't horrible. So they were up walking. They weren't crawling at the fire I was at because they were poking holes in the ceiling on the first floor. So, we got a little fire in the ceiling here. So they ran upstairs to make sure nobody was in the bedrooms. And the carpet sagged. And the carpet, the nailers around the room held the carpet in. And the truck, it was, you know, it was getting enough oxygen. It probably was smoldering for a day, but the trusses were already burnt and just smoldering. And like you said, the gusset plates let go. And luckily, it wasn't in the middle of the night and heavy smoke conditions. A firefighter could have been crawling in there, and the carpet could have let go, and it could have came right through.
So they basically had a trampoline held together by about a 16th or an 8th inch of that carpet strip that was the holding the whole thing up.
Right, right.
Oh, and that's brutal.
And we have documentation on that in the FDNY. And I, you know, not to kid anybody about it. You know, a lot of people think New York City skyscrapers and that's it. We have five boroughs. Some are very residential, like Queens and Staten Island have some giant areas. The Bronx has a very residential up north. And we're seeing newer construction on vacant lots. You know, the city has rebounded from the typical, you know, years ago. So this is prevalent all around, and we're going to see it just by the depth and the magnitude. We actually changed our firefighting standards in these buildings that, you know, we won't enter a room on fire. We will stay in the hallway because there's more support there from the structural members from the floor below. So,
sure, yeah, because that hallway almost every time has got structural walls on one side or the other, so you're not cantilevered that far off of it from an engineering standpoint, so it's probably the safer place to be.
Exactly, you know, but, you know, then, you know, it's kind of tough to tell a person, well, I didn't want to go in that room to grab your kid because I was worried about sinking,
exactly.
You know, puts
exactly.
me in a rough spot. So,
man,
I mean,
no kidding. No kidding.
That's part of our job. I mean, you know, that whole gusset scenario, you know, I would love for the building industry and the fire industry to shake hands on this and come up with a solution. You know, like I said, I'm coming up on, you know, I entered the fire service in 1979 as a volunteer, and, you know, 40 years plus later, you know, there really hasn't been the big solution and the handshake between us yet.
No kidding.
You know, I'm that kind of guy. I'd like to see both industries work together, you know. And, you know, my thought was, okay, it takes another 5 minutes of labor to put it together. It costs more in materials. But, you know, how much does 8 screws cost, you know?
And not really that much, especially when, yeah. I mean, and they're, yeah. It's a factory atmosphere. So sitting there, you know, they're pressing those pieces in. If they put 4 more screws in there, what is that, 7 to 10 seconds maybe, you know,
right.
On a production line kind of thing. So really, in the scheme of stuff, you sure wouldn't see that big of expense on it. And, man, if you could come up with something like that, that would be, it seems so simple. From my point
right.
of view, you know,
right. And I mean, you know, on the other point too, and I don't know, and you're very involved with the home and things like that. I just also look at when we upgrade things, you know, we are talking about better insurance rates for a homeowner or something like that. You know, maybe the insurance industry will say, oh, they're prefab trusses. Oh my God, if they, you know, they have a fire in their attic, it's going to collapse. We got to think about that. Whereas, you know, nominal lumber, well, that's going to hold up more, you know?
Yep.
So,
well,
maybe the trusses will hold.
You know, even if Simpson Strong Tie, and I don't know if they came up with something like this, but they're one of the big bracket companies out there. If they even came up with a retrofit kit that you could go in there that was a little bit larger than that, you know, bracket that's already existing, and you could go up in there and put in, you know, just clamped on either side that you could bolt right through, man, it would be so easy to go through and retrofit right. stuff when you're doing a remodel or anything else and just make it safer for everybody involved. And
right.
and with storms and everything else, from hurricanes to earthquakes, you're now adding added strength to that, because that joint is, of course, the weak spot of that truss anyway. So you're adding that much more strength to it. So it wouldn't be a bad idea. I like where you're going with that.
Right. Even, and you may know more about the factories than I do. I mean, I was a young kid going through college, so I became a structural steel fabricator, and mm-hmm. then I learned how to do iron work. But, like, you know, years ago they had the old rivets, you know, like now we just use the high strength bolts, but, you know, you don't even know if, you know, the wood industry had an air-powered nailer that went through the whole thing, or can just be driven through, you know, with the
yeah.
with the air tools they have in a factory or something. So,
yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of good yeah. answers with that. And one thing I want to talk to you about too as well is, what are some of the more common, you know, causes of residential fires? I was on Facebook a week or two ago, and social media is always great for opening my eyes up going, what is going on here? This nice lady was complaining about her window air conditioner, and she was on her third extension cord, and it was burning the extension cord up and creating a popping noise, and she would just click the breaker on again, go get a different one, and then turn the AC on again. And I'm like, are you trying to burn your house down? Or are you trying to ruin that air conditioner? What is happening here?
Well, if I could jump in and just say, number one, and I could tell this just from my own responses. I work in a heavy tenement area, and we'll get a lot of phone calls for smoke on, you know, 2-3 floors. And, you know, we're in there for 10 minutes, and we come out, and people are, oh, false alarm. And we're like, oh, burnt food. And cooking will always be our number one, I think, source of fires where they're going to start. Unattended cooking, cooking emergencies. I pressed the wrong button on the microwave. The phone rang. I ran over here. You know, I was on Google on my phone, and I forgot something was in the oven. So cooking is always our number one. It's funny because I was on the phone with somebody the other day, and I just tell them, no, I had a little kitchen fire the other day. The person ran down, quote, to the bodega to get some extra milk. And when they said, it's on the stove, just it boiled over and it lit on fire and lit the cabinets on fire. So luckily it was just the cabinets, but we were able to put it out with an extinguisher.
Yeah.
And I said to the one fella, I'm like, you know, you think the appliance industry right now could get like these little Frisbee discs where, you know, something that's like a little recessed light with a magnet, and it went to the hood above the stove. And if the temperature got so hot, flame impingement, it would drop like a dry chemical powder or some like little halon or something like that. I know halon might be the wrong product, but some fire retardant that could put that fire out before it grew too fast. Would there be problems with it? Yeah, sure. You know, the person is home and the thing let go, and you're going to be vacuuming and dusting. But I wonder how many, like, quote, homemade fire extinguishers. And a while back they had these Frisbees that we were going to be sold to the fire service to throw in the window, and they would have an explosion and put the fire out, but they were just so expensive.
I've seen those balls too that are about the size of a large grapefruit that you can throw in that do the same kind of thing, that I think I saw on social media here a couple years ago, that looked like they were doing the same kind of thing where you could literally throw in a dumpster fire and it would put the dumpster fire out just from the explosion from the heat.
Right. And years ago, they actually had them. If you ever Googled it, you'll see these old historic glass bulbs and balls that they used to hang on the walls. You'd be like, what the heck are those with the colored water? That was a chemical reaction happening, and they had to do away with those.
I think with appliances, though, so right now there's a big push where everything's going smart home. So right now, when you turn the stove on with a lot of brands, if you've got the matching hood over the top of it, if you get the smart home appliances, that hood will react to whatever you're cooking down below. So I would think if you can have the hood and the cooktop talking together, the least you could do from a safety standpoint is make it where it gives a beep or something and shuts off the heat if you hit that heat limit on the hood up above, because you could at least turn the stove off if it was unattended.
To me, that'd be miraculous. Would cut down, you know, they kind of cut down a tremendous amount of fires from unattended cooking or accidental cooking and things like that.
I mean, that doesn't take rocket science to make it go, hey, this hood's getting way too hot. We've got hot air coming up here that exceeds what it should be in that house. Let's turn that off, and at least you've cut the source down.
I'm full-fledged on that deal. I think that's terrific, you know. And the other thing, too, is, you know, we talk about the fire. I would say also, if you ever contacted a burn center, most burns probably do come from the kitchen. And then you've got to think about it, too. How many times you grabbed the pot that was, or your pot holder, you know, was not well, and you burnt your fingers, and so many go, you know, undocumented. But it would also cut downs on trips to the burn center.
You know? I've done it to myself where I've had that that dish that was, I had the pan in the oven to finish it off, like if I got some steaks or something, and then I just, like an idiot, grab the handle and go, that's hot, you know. But I had a guy that I was actually the designer on, and came in after the fact, but he was a guy that had limited mental abilities, really nice guy, though, and he had set his TV dinner in and went and hit the shower real quick. And instead of putting 2 minutes, put 20 minutes on and lit the whole kitchen up, you know, because The microwave did that. And I think you could do the same thing with a microwave to put some kind of a smoke sensor in there that would just go, whoa, 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 slow down. We're burning stuff up.
Definitely. I've seen plenty of microwaves that when, you know, you open the door up, the thing's still on fire, you know, even though that gives it air, and we'll hit it with a dry chemical extinguisher, which, you know, everybody in their house should have something in the kitchen with a fire safety standpoint. You know, you can get those at a local hardware store, big box store, and you have to have one of them near your kitchen. And if you don't do that, you know, you have to have one box of baking soda that you could pour onto something.
I have two,
you know?
And a reason why I have two in personal experience. This girl I was dating years ago, her family was going through her dad, and we were over at the house, and I'd put both of these in because he was dealing with Alzheimer's, and he walked in the kitchen one evening, and they had family over at the house and everything else, and I was in the basement with other people at the house, and he walked in with his plastic coffee cup, turned the electric stove on high, and put his big, you know, 64-ounce plastic truck driver coffee mug on it to heat it, and then walked away. And I was downstairs, and I heard two different smoke alarms going off, and I'm like, that's not good because those aren't tied together. So I went running upstairs, and he was in there with he was not capable enough to turn the stove off to think that that was the problem. So he was whipping it with a towel and throwing burning plastic around everywhere. And man, I went through two of the big 5-pound extinguishers before I got the fire out. And I know how to use them. And I had countertops and cabinets, and it was close, you know. Yeah, so I always put two of them, you know.
No, that's terrific, you know. And, you know, you were mentioning about the electrical cord there. You know, any big appliance is really made to go right into the outlet on the wall. You shouldn't be using a cheaper electrical cord. You know, we're all human. Of course, we're not going to, if it's $15 or $5, most of us are going to spend the $5 on the cord. We're not buying the expensive cord. And, you know, you talk about that. I mean, you know, when we were discussing this the other day about, you know, these little surge protectors and where we're plugging in everything is electric now. Everything has to be charged. You know, I'm charging a battery for my Sawzall down in the basement right now because I want to do some work this afternoon.
Yep.
And, you know, that's charging. But, you know, we're so prevalent on charging everything with modern technology. We're seeing more of our older homes have electrical fires in the socket, maybe because it's so old, the wiring. We're also seeing, when you said that about extension cords, you know, it's very important for homeowners that when they look at products, look at the boxes for that UL approved rating. That means it was tested here and approved for use, because a lot of these 99 cent stores are getting products that maybe aren't top of the line. And we are seeing more and more fires in different neighborhoods, you know, from electrical problems, you know, plugged in, and even cheaper phone chargers. I mean,
those are so bad.
You know,
oh,
I yell at my kids, you know, and when I say my kids are 25 and 27, you know, they left for work the other day, and one of them, you know, left her, I always walked in, and there was her phone charger right next to her bed, still plugged in. And I'm like, you know, it draws a little electric, but I just don't need a malfunction when this thing's heating for 8 days straight, you know?
Man, and what's even worse is I've seen, and I know you have too, but the little portable battery packs that you get for $10 at the 99 cent store or wherever else, you know, the little tiny ones, and they're the rechargeable ones and those things, man, those cheap ones, those things will just spontaneously combust, and then you got a heck of a problem going.
Right. And I try to teach, you know, for any adult out there, you know, one about when we take cords out of the outlet, you know, you can't spend enough time telling your children to wiggle it and gently pull it out versus just pulling the cord. That's going to fray the cord over the years. It's going to snap one of the plugs off eventually when they pull from an angle, and you're going to have real problems. But I'll also take my kids every now and then, even when they're older, just a little reminder. And if I get done charging my phone, they're near, I said, come here a second, just put your hand here. Yep. And I'll let them feel the little charger. I said, look, you feel how hot that is? What happens if that melts and there's a malfunction? Or nobody's home, you know. And I just try to, you know, being that firefighting dad, you always
you see it every day, you know? Of course you do. I mean,
right?
That's how I would be playing it as well if I had that, you know, daily reminder of what happens when things go bad, especially when it takes 2 or 3 seconds to fix that.
Right. Right.
You know,
and
I mean,
like you said, human error is a lot of our problems when it comes to fire safety like that, you know, situations like that.
Well, I want to talk too with you about, and this is something that I think is super important. And I talk a lot about it in the show because it's home safety, but I get worried about this home technology stuff that we're getting into now with and dealing with rescues and everything else with, you know, there's all these new, for instance, you've got the new shingles that are supposedly coming out that are going to be the Tesla shingles that are solar. And then more importantly to me that I get concerned about is I've got a house here that because of trees, I really couldn't put solar panels on the roof, but I know so many other people that do. But man, if I'm in a fire situation in my house and I am limiting how the fire department can attack the fire at my house, I'm not going to make that choice to do that. But I think there's a lot of people out there that want to be green and do the right thing in their eyes, but they don't see the other problems that they're causing.
I agree with you in a lot of sense of the word there. I believe in green energy. A couple of my neighbors jumped on the bandwagon right when they came through the neighborhood. They had to have them on. They had to have save the energy. And I was looking more toward the wind energy and trying to figure out how I could get a small turbine up, you know.
Yeah.
A couple of different things. Let's go back to our first conversation. And, let's make believe this little outfit comes in and they want to sell you solar panels. And we just said we have lightweight wood truss roof.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to throw how much weight up on this roof? And then we're going to throw these panels up there. So if we did have that barbecue fire extend right up the outside of the wall into the soffit,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we get in the attic space, are we going to have an earlier collapse and failure of the trusses because of all that extra weight up there? Now, I don't know, Eric, you may know how many pounds they carry. I don't, how much weight is up on the roof per panel, but you're adding quite a large load.
Heavy.
Now
they're heavy,
you know,
I mean, I've moved them around,
Right. And I'm in the Northeast, so we're engineered for snow loads, and I understand that. But, you know, other areas, you know, if you do add the snow load to this and, you do have a fire up there, one, we have to worry about earlier collapse. And even if you were at home with your own family sleeping and the fire extended that way. For a firefighting standpoint, yes, we still cut roofs open to let superheated gases out. And can we cut the gables? Sometimes we can. We might be able to get to the gable vent. But preliminary, we work a lot on roofs. There's some departments that strive for it. We have some new studies going on about the values of it. But it does release all superheated gases and flame smoke that are deadly and carbon monoxide out of the building. So it's part of many departments' standard operating procedures.
Yeah.
The solar panels, you know, number one is where's the shutoff for us? And we also know that these things still store energy even though you shut them off. So for us as firefighters, even if we come to an electrical emergency, like the house is struck by lightning, we're just going to shut your power off and basically stand fast because we don't want to spray water on these things with the electrical charge they're holding and stuff. So,
And that's some of the stuff that I get worried about too, because now all of a sudden we're talking about, the newer technology discussion is storing the power off of that as well within the house into a big battery pack or a power unit. And I could see that being the same kind of thing. It's almost like you guys having to pop in and put out a car fire. If it's an electric car, that's a whole different situation than somebody's Honda Civic.
Right. With all this, with the, our job has gone from, I was, like I said, a mid-80s firefighter, early 80s volunteer. And I did all the vacant buildings in the 80s in the inner cities. And we have gone so far in my career where, like a college degree with, the chemicals that we run into. I just recently had a call a couple months ago with a cell tower and they, you know, they put these giant cell rooms and look like containers on top of buildings. And, you know, they put them on the parapet walls. Some are tied into the roof. That's added weight for us. We can't cut the roof area now for these big tenements, which is difficult to do. But I had the batteries just overheated. They were a nickel cadmium. I forgot, nickel cadmium something. And we, of course, we had a mask up and go in there, but our main concern was we just basically shut the power down and these batteries have to cool and cool. And even on our new nickel cadmium batteries for just like, let's take with those hoverboard things. Now, I don't know if their batteries come out, but, you know, as firefighters, they're telling us now to take those batteries and submerge them in a tub or a bucket of water and get them out of the structure. Which you would say, oh, you never put a battery in water, but they keep whatever type of chemical reaction is occurring inside the battery, they keep generating heat. And if we don't keep those batteries cooling in water, they can regenerate heat. And
and they take on, they take off again. So,
right. They had a little fire in Harlem recently. This is kind of comical, and I'm sure that, you know, people would love to hear this story. So many people buy those little electronic mopeds, I guess you would call them now. That's what, and they zoom all around the city delivering food, and people are just getting them. It's a new means of transportation. Well, this one place that fixed them had a problem, and it turned out it was a bad battery. Well, it went on fire and this and that, and the guys brought the little machines outside on the sidewalk. The firemen put the fire out inside the store. Well, the people took these little scooters and they took them to a different store. Well, the next day, that same battery went back on fire and lit the other store because it kept they traced it back, you know, and the battery keeps regenerating heat. So, you know, there's a new, that's a whole nother dilemma for one, building code officials, fire officials, the building industry, if we're going to put these battery backups in the, I don't know, here in the Northeast, we have a lot of basements. I know down South, they don't, here, would they have to put this in a special room with double 5/8 drywall, or, what kind of code are we going to do for these battery pack rooms,
And a lot of them that I've seen, they're just designed to, the way they're selling them is that they just mount on the garage wall. Well, man, that's its own problem right there. And that's where I start worried about it. Cause if you get a fire out in the garage, which, that's probably the, for you guys would be the second most popular place, besides a laundry room, it's probably in your top three, at least, man, you're going to put that in there. And then you guys come in there and there's a store that much stored energy and you're throwing water around. That seems dangerous to me as a homeowner.
Oh, sure, sure. And like you said, even if they label giant shutoffs on the outside of a building, like maybe I know you mentioned the shingles. They were talking about doing that and having a shutout. How much energy is still stored in there? And when you start flowing water, we're going to see some problems for sure with the arcing and, anybody getting possibly electrocuted. So,
yeah, we don't want to see that. And it's interesting, like with a lot of these electric cars now, I love watching all different types of motorsports. I'm a car guy, but I'm seeing now that motorsports parks are now starting to say that they won't let battery powered vehicles out on the track because their safety teams are not equipped to put a car fire out correctly.
You mentioned, and I don't want to make this a big fire talk, but while we're into it, another change in our career years ago with race car industries, a lot of people I don't think know that the jaws of life were originally made to get race car drivers out of cars. And then they came into the fire service to assist us cutting cars apart. And between the car industry having so many airbags now, we have to watch where we cut the A post, the B post, where the airbags are, but also we have to look for those bright orange high voltage lines. We don't want to be pushing a person hits a tree and we're trying to cut them out. Now we're looking, you don't know where the batteries are anymore than most of these cars. You're checking this one's underneath the back seat, this one's under the floorboard, this one's in the trunk. Oh, this one you got to take the spare tire out. It's underneath the spare. It's difficult to find these cars, and and there's a lot of foreign cars. Even when you hit the main disconnect, they could hold from 20 minutes up to an hour a charge. Wow. So, you know, we have to be very careful. You know, technology is maybe terrific. We're cutting down on fuel costs, but on the other end, you know, there's always the pros and cons to everything.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, you know, I wanted to get this before we head out to break here, but I wanted to just touch base on, and I think I know your answer on this, but, you know, a lot of people out there, that's not required, at least in our neck of the woods, unless you're out in the middle of the woods or something like that, but a lot of areas for most residential homes out here in the Northwest where I'm located, fire sprinklers are something that's not required. But have you seen in residential fire sprinkler systems a huge change in how that helps, you know, the survivability of a house fire or even the damage of that?
Sprinklers are phenomenal. They've taken such a leap forward and have reduced the number of fires. The fire still will occur, but it will limit the damage and definitely save lives. With the new, what is that, PEX it's called, the flex tube and stuff, you know, it's so much easier to run. You don't have the PVC with cutting and the glue and this and that. So PEX lines are easier to get up into your attic spaces. And the sprinklers, they don't stick down like we're in a commercial building from the ceiling. They could be recessed and they'll pop down when the heat will hit them. But they're phenomenal on cutting down and reducing fire losses and also your insurance, your home. I do know certain states that have instituted it, like Fairfax County, Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C. They were very prevalent in bringing it into their building codes and getting it in, I know their townhouses and condos, and now I believe, and don't quote me on this, we'd have to go and Google it and investigate.
Sure.
I believe their single-family homes have them now also, which could drastically reduce your home insurance because you have a sprinkler in there.
That's awesome. And yeah, if you can get that cut back where all of a sudden, even financially, it starts to make a little bit of sense in the long term, then I think that makes it really easy for people to stomach that extra cost of putting that in there, which of course ends up being an additional cost to the house. But if it's safer for you and it ends up penciling out where it makes a lot more sense financially without even taking risk into account, I think that sure helps everybody involved.
I totally agree. And I think, you know, we won't see the retrofit, I don't think, as much, because I think people would rather say, hey, I'm going to redo my kitchen, or I'm going to go with the open floor plan that's so prevalent right now. And, I got to update my bathroom because it's 30 years old. And they're not going to, I'm going to update my sprinkler system. You know,
it's not sexy like the new bathroom. It's not.
Exactly. Well, I know you got, the big heart-shaped tub in your bathroom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's with the red walls and the champagne. Yeah, you know what it looks like.
But, when we put that into a mortgage in the beginning, it will definitely pay for itself right away. You know, something very, you know, would the fire service love to see it? Yes, we would. Would it cut down on fires? Yeah. You know, some guys are, that's what we get paid for. No, we get paid to save lives. And if sprinklers are doing that's fine. You know, that's
what they're supposed to do. You guys aren't hurting for work. That's for sure. Well, Mike, man, thanks for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. And we're going to do this fairly often because I think there's a lot of subjects that I want to dive into the next time. And we'll even maybe talk about, you know, people doing fire pits on decks. And I mean, there's so many other things we can tackle outside of just the kind of the stuff that we touched on today.
No, I appreciate you having me on today. It was a lot of fun. I hope I didn't bore any of your listeners. Where'd this guy come from with his New York accent or something, you know? So at least I didn't say, hey, Eric, how you doing, right? Everybody likes that one.
That's awesome, brother, and appreciate what you're doing out there, man. And thanks for jumping on and helping some people out.
Well, thanks very much. And everybody, if I could just say two things is, one, for your homes, consider if you don't have one, let's get out to the store and get a fire extinguisher. And two, the value of smoke detectors in your house. If you don't have a hardwired system, please, you know, they say we do it when the clocks change. Don't be afraid to walk through your room every now and then and just press that button and make sure your battery's not dead, because smoke detectors do save lives.
And if they're over 10 years old, spend a few bucks and get some new ones too.
Definitely. And a lot of fire departments now, if you watch them on social media, they will give them to elderly people, senior citizens, or people with not the financial backing to be able to get it. Many departments are handing out free batteries and free smoke detectors. So check your local departments.
Exactly. And I've always given that advice too. If you can't get up and reach it in your house and you don't have the ability to hire somebody out there, I bet if you called their non-emergency number, they've got somebody that can probably suggest to come out and help you out.
Oh, definitely. That's what we're here to help people, fire departments. And that would be a service call we'd love to respond to.
Exactly. Thanks, brother. Appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thanks very much, Eric. Stay safe.
You too, brother. Thanks for listening to Around the House. Hey, it's Eric G from Around the House. Are you planning a decking or siding project this year? If you are, you've got to check out my friends at Millboard. Millboard is a completely different kind of composite decking and cladding that enhances outdoor spaces with enduring distinction. Hand molded from the finest oak, it realistically mimics the natural grain and color of premium hardwood. If you're looking for something that doesn't look like plastic and instead real wood, check out Millboard.com. Make sure and check out that interview we did just a few weeks back. That's Millboard.com.